Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Representing for a second time,
Whip Snakes Lacrosse Club!
Oh! Chase, was that you?
Oh, no.
Uh-oh.
Did you break the trophy?
No.
Yeah, it was, that was pretty crazy.
Oh! What? What?
You got to get the ball to 42.
Run Lacrosse!
Hello and welcome back to the PLL Happy Hour podcast alongside Chris Rosenthal. I'm your host, Kevin Brown. Rosie, we got through the regular season. Last couple guests we've had on this podcast, Rosie, we made the listeners wait a little bit for the introduction. All right. And this week we've got a special guest who did not wait at all to make an imprint on his PLL debut. The one and only Jack Van Overbeek. Jack, welcome to the show. Congrats on a great debut and two big wins in your first two PLL games. How did it feel?
Felt great. I mean, dream come true, obviously, just being out there alone and obviously getting to know the guys a lot more than I did with just training camp. And obviously super thankful just to get any opportunity to play lacrosse, but especially there in Utah was top tier, so.
Yeah, so just take us through the whole week that kind of led up to you making your debut. Like, when did you find out you were getting the call? What were you doing at the time? Like, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so the week before last week, they were kind of deciding if they wanted to put me in the lineup when they were playing the Atlas. But we hadn't clinched a playoff spot, so they were kind of unsure of, I don't know, pressure and all that stuff and wanted to clinch a spot that weekend. Ultimately didn't get up, ended up getting the call that weekend. So I was a little bit bummed about that, but obviously like the whole year with how that goes, you just try to keep your head up and just keep working. But yeah, that week, I did get the call. I was just sitting at my internship, in my cube, and Coach Bates had sent me the text that I was going to be suiting up on Friday versus the Redwoods. And thank God that there was nobody else in the office, cause I was pretty fired up. Obviously thinking about it right before I traveled or anything like that, just to, like, understand that this was kind of like the opportunity. It had kind of been a long time coming for myself, just not being able to play or travel really in much of the games, or see the fellas. So I was very excited, to say the least.
Now, Jack, you don't see your name up on draft night. You kind of bide your time behind Asher Nolting at High Point. You get the reins of the offense your last couple of years there. You impress enough that Coach Chris Bates, he knows that you're ready for a moment like this. And boy, did you take it. The first PLL goal you ever score is a behind-the-back beaut that ends up on SportsCenter top 10 plays number one, mind you. And your second PLL goal is a sick diving backhander for the win in overtime. Is there a better debut that you could have dreamt up Thursday night?
No. I mean, obviously, every single dream I think of myself, like in the backyard with my older brothers, like when I was thrown into lacrosse in third grade, right? Every single dream that could have possibly came true did. And obviously it's crazy to think about it. And it's been like a crazy 72 hours and it still doesn't really feel real to me, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, like you said, it really can't get much better than that. And I think also adding to that is playing in Utah as well. This is my first ever game, and for the crowd to be the way it was something special. And I think it set the tone for all my future games, hopefully, right? Just having that kind of atmosphere was insane as well.
Now, like, leading up to that, were you a little bit nervous, you know, before the game? Because, like, those goals are pretty confident-seeming goals, right? Like, a lot of people might not have, you know, the kind of the guts to rip behind the back in that situation. Were you nervous heading in, or were you pretty loose before the game started?
Yeah, I mean, definitely nervous, right? I mean, playing on the highest stage, any game, right? I remember some of the college games I played in, like, against the Dukes at the big ACC schools. Yeah, there's always an aspect of you that is nervous and, you know, a little bit butterflies in the stomach right before you head out there. But I don't know. I looked around in the locker room pregame, right? And you look around at all the guys that are in there, right? Like, I'm going to be playing with Connor Fields, Mack O'Keefe, Tom Shriver, right? Ryan Ambler. I could go on and on. Every single guy in that roster I, like, grew up watching. And it's insane to think about still. And I'm even teammates with some of these guys. But, yeah, like, looking around, hearing what the guys are saying to me, right? Just go out there, do exactly what I did in training camp, what I've done in practice. And just kind of like knowing that those guys trust me, right? The people that I look up to most, knowing that they have the absolute trust in me to go out there and make plays is probably like the biggest thing that could boost my confidence. But yeah, absolutely. I was very nervous going into Friday and then especially Saturday because I don't even think I was supposed to be playing Saturday, but obviously with Tom going down, that kind of helped me out as well, unfortunately. But
yeah, tough blow for your organization, the Archers, with reigning MVP Tom Shriver suffering a season-ending injury in that first game, like you mentioned, Jack. Just you've mentioned a couple times, not to totally segue from some bad news into your great weekend as we're trying to do, but making your PLL debut in the Utah market, growing up in Minnesota, just size up what that means to you and just briefly go through your lacrosse journey a little bit.
Yeah. So obviously growing up in Minnesota, like, lacrosse isn't very prevalent at all, right? It's growing a ton and it has, but yeah, both my brothers played baseball growing up. So that's kind of like what I was assuming I was going to do, right? I was like the only one of my brothers to play a little bit of hockey, but my dad was a basketball guy. So yeah, it was basically football, basketball, and baseball, right? Like, that's what we play in Minnesota. And then lacrosse all of a sudden came along when I was in third grade. Both my older brothers picked it up immediately. And I guess maybe just me being the youngest, I always just wanted to constantly be doing something, right? And baseball just didn't really scratch the itch as much as lacrosse did for me. So as soon as it came to Minnesota, I immediately picked up the stick and, you know, I was always out there with my brothers in the backyard, watching as much lacrosse as I could. And slowly but surely just fell more and more in love with it. By the time I had gotten to high school, that was basically the only sport I really enjoyed playing. I played football in my high school freshman year, but, wasn't really the same as what it was in like Pop Warner and all that stuff. So kind of just went all in with lacrosse and lucky enough to have the best high school coach, in my opinion, from Minnesota, Rob Horn. Without him, I 100% wouldn't have been at High Point. And without Coach Torpy, I would not have 100% been in the PLL right now. So that's basically my journey. And I'm very thankful with how everything ended up.
Now, you mentioned Coach Torpy. Just what was the experience like playing for him? He's got to be, I'd say, one of our favorite interviews. We've both talked to him quite a bit over the years. Just what was it like kind of developing your game a bit as a member of the Panthers?
Yeah, I mean, when I first got to campus, I didn't know anything, right? I mean, you think you know a lot more than you do. And when I got there, he did an exceptional job of developing me and obviously everybody else that's gone through there. But yeah, no, I can't really picture myself being coached by any other coach in college, right? Obviously he left High Point for Brown, and I'm stoked for him, right? I know all the other guys too that graduated, and even the guys that are still at school are really excited for him. It's bittersweet, but I know he's going to do a hell of a job there and continue to develop players as well as I know he has, and then we'll do.
And just go into put your Panther pride hat on a little more with just you and Asher Nolte both being in this league now, Asher being among the MVP candidates, especially if Jeff Teat didn't run away with it so much this summer, but a spectacular couple seasons for him under his belt. You've obviously learned under him a bunch. Just what's it like to be in this league with him and also your buddy Braden Maia, who saw quite a bit of game time for Carolina Chaos this season?
Yeah, I mean, it's insane. I was lucky enough to get 2 years with Ash, and I was probably pretty annoying. Tukes was my freshman and sophomore year. I was always right behind him in line and trying to soak up as much knowledge as possible from him. But yeah, I mean, if you get a player like that to learn from and you're still at school, anybody who has that opportunity, high school, college, whatever it may be, I would highly recommend going and finding the highest level player you guys can find and just pick their brain about stuff, right? Because I would watch him in every single rep before, during, after, right, watching film. But every single time I could even soak up a little bit of knowledge from him, I would. And I know Braden was the exact same way, right? We had a guy, Sean Coughlin, who basically was what Braden was, but right-handed my freshman year. And he, the exact same way, just like a sponge, you know, if you can attach yourself to any older guy who's tried and true with all this, I mean, you're going to be a step ahead of a lot of other kids in your position.
Now, there's a pretty strong, like, Panther to PLL pro game pipeline over the past few years. Have you heard from any of those guys regarding your debut, or is everybody kind of locked in on their own, you know, playoff runs at this point? You think maybe like an off-season conversation might be more in the works?
No, yeah. I mean, I talk to Braden like basically every day. He's 100% like one of my best friends. And I don't know, with Asher, obviously he's a little bit more on the competition side right now, and so is Braden. But I hadn't really spoken to him before the game at all, no. But yeah, no, I had a tremendous amount of support from obviously everybody who is from High Point and is still there, all my buddies there. But yeah, no, speaking about like, I guess the quote unquote pipeline of it all, I mean, I would give all the credit in the world to Coach Torpy and Coach Kenny, Coach Tuma, Coach Chakey, Coach Logan, who were all there, right? But yeah, no, if it weren't for them, I know most likely all of us probably wouldn't be here as well. So.
And how about just the amount of people who've reached out otherwise? Any random high school friends you've even spoken to in years? Yo, I just saw you on SportsCenter, like any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, definitely a little bit of it. I mean, after the game, I had a lot of text messages, a lot more I would have figured, right? But yeah, I mean, childhood.
How many?
I had 150 the night after the game. 100% the most texts I've ever had in my entire life. But no, yeah, I mean, there's kids that I grew up with, and I didn't go to the high school that I grew up in. I grew up in Rosemount, Minnesota, and I ended up going to Benilde St. Margaret's in St. Louis Park. But yeah, like kids that I grew up with who were my best friends at the time, and, you know, I haven't seen them in so long, right? But we stay in touch every once in a while, just reaching out, you know, giving any type of support, and just overall just Minnesota guys as well, you know, and it's been awesome.
During that communication, are you aware of the nickname that kind of formed for you, Jack Van Overtime, kind of started working its way through the internet?
I did hear that,
How do you feel about that?
I think it might be a little premature, but obviously I like it. I don't know. I mean, I've heard it's like there's this one guy, Isaac Newland, who is from High Point as well, but I saw one of his comments and he said Van Ocho, but that guy is one of the most, I don't know, just the biggest ball of energy you could ever see in your entire life. But no, I mean, I think the Van Overtime might be a little premature. I like it, obviously. Yeah, it's cool.
Van Ocho works. Van Ocho is pretty steezy. It's we'll settle for Van Ocho if Van Overtime is a little premature. But yeah, Jack, you parlay that into another 3-point game the very next night to go 2-0 on the weekend. Just in a battle of what was, for all intents and purposes, the Western Conference Championship, and then the loser would be the 5th seed in a tough matchup with Maryland. So a very high stakes game. You guys end up winning 13-9. What was it like refocusing and also just kind of conserving and utilizing all your energy the next night?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we mentioned it, but with Tom going down in early on in that first game, right, that was a huge blow. And took the wind out of us for a little bit there in the first game, right? But yeah, like the leaders on the team, Ryan Ambler, Grant, Connor Fields did an exceptional job, obviously, of, you know, keep us on focused and staying on track, right? And especially going into Saturday, yeah, like you play a tough game with the Redwoods, and you got to go out and do the exact same thing against the Outlaws. And no team in this league is, you know, bad by any means, right? But yeah, no, that was where most of the pressure, I would say, that I felt probably set in was the moment I knew I was playing against the Outlaws. Like, obviously, with putting it all together, right? Like, championship series spot is on the line. Obviously, Western Conference, you get a bye, 2 weeks of a bye, right? So you can get a lot of momentum from a win like this. but then, yeah, you go back to it and you get great coaching, obviously. Leaders of the team stepping up, just kind of instilling you with trust was huge. And then also just the fans in Utah. I think if we would have played that game in Denver, it could have been a completely different story, or say if we're not a home team, right? But hearing the crowd when the other team scores, you don't hear a thing, right? You could hear a pin drop, right? But then you hear when Bo picks the ball off one-handed, you hear the roar. Sis wins a face-off late in the game. Dauber makes a huge save, right? All these different plays, right, just stacked and stacked on top of each other. It's, you know, I'll just credit the fans a ton.
Did you get, like, a different set of instructions? You know, I talked to Coach Bates a bit after the first game, just kind of, you know, about what they were expecting of you as a newcomer in that kind of high-pressure situation. Once they saw you could perform after the first game, did they, you know, maybe kind of expand their instructions a little bit more? People tell you a few more things heading into the second one?
not a ton. Not much expansion. But definitely kind of like, all right, like, we know Tom's not going to be there, right? So we need every single guy on the offense kind of to step up. Like, it wasn't really directly aimed at any person, right? It was kind of just like, all right, this all falls on all of our shoulders. Like, I remember Fieldsy saying, like, let's win this for Tom, right? Like, he's the heart and soul of this team, as he, and he has been for the last 6 years, right? So let's kind of all, let's all take the brunt of this, and let's figure it out for him.
Yeah, Coach Chris Bates' message of, hey, honoring Tom and how he plays so relentlessly is really something that was super evident in both games, but especially that second game after the news became official that he was definitely going to be out. Jack, just, I got to preface the context of you getting inserted into the lineup with one of our last questions here. Just, so Matt Moore goes down with kind of a similar injury. I think that's what was prior to what you were alluding to, almost cracking the lineup against the Atlas the week prior. Then, kind of a strange trade happens where Coach Chris Bates trades the third round pick next season's draft for Jackson Morrill. And I confirm with team sources, the reason the pick was sent was so they didn't have to play Jackson Morrill this weekend, because he was available off the three game rule, where you're available after three games if you're not cracking the active or protected roster for game day lineups. You come in there anyway. Are you feeling that pressure of like, hey, if I don't perform, I have another guy that Batesy just acquired waiting in the wings?
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of pressure, right? I mean, like, obviously with that pickup, right, I could go one or two directions with it, right? I'd be like, oh, well, they're already planning on whatever their idea of it is, right? Or, I mean, obviously Jackson Morrill's a hell of a player, and he's tried and proven in this league. But yeah, I mean, to be honest, I didn't really have much to lose in my mind going out there, right? So I might as well just go and play as hard as I can, and yeah, try as hard as I can to, I don't know, play as well as possible, right? And I was lucky enough to get a lot of bounces, and you know, obviously the weekend is the weekend. So
you got more than some bounces, man. The instincts for those goals were truly something special. So definitely give yourself a little more credit than the bounces this weekend. The just let's end off on a more a bit of a softball to, as we head into your 2 weeks of bye. Just PG rated version for our listeners. This isn't the post game podcast, if you will. What were some of the celebratory scenes like with your new teammates who you really haven't hung out with since training camp, like you mentioned?
I mean, it's great. I mean, any interaction with any of these guys is like a dream come true to me. So like in the locker room after the game, right? Just like messing around or just talking and like goofing around with Augie, and like obviously Fieldsy, all those guys, right? Just like being able to hang out, pick their brain about literally anything, joke around, do whatever with those guys is amazing and unreal. But yeah, like playing cards in the hotel, like all those moments, I'll definitely cherish and make the most of for sure. Any opportunity I get to hang out with those guys, obviously training camp was the last time, if not Minnesota, when I was there on the sidelines, but any opportunity I can to just play cards or hang out with them in the hotel or do whatever in the locker room, in between practice, pre-game meals, post-game meals, whatever it is, dream come true. And I'm very, very lucky to do it. So
love it, Jack. Jack Van Ocho joining the show. Not yet Jack Van Overtime. Jack, thanks so much for joining, and good luck for the rest of the way.
Thank you guys very much.
Thank you so much, Jack, for joining the podcast. That was an awesome appearance to wrap a bow tie on a very, very successful debut weekend for the High Point Panther. Rosie, let's keep on chugging along for the other games that happened during the last weekend of regular season action for this 2024 PLL season. And Rosie, let's go a little bit non-linear here. Our listeners need to be kept on their toes a little bit. All right, we're going. We've been going chronologically, either reverse or straight chronological for the last few weeks. And this week we're jumping around a little bit. Let's start with the opener on Saturday, kind of the game that had the least amount of stakes. You saw the tweets pregame. Atlas had a 99.99999% chance to lock up the bye week in the Eastern Conference title, regular season title, that is. And it wasn't quite that number, but it was 99.something%. And because of their superior goal differential, they would have needed to lose by some crazy number, like 15 goals. And that was never going to happen, but the Water Dogs finally win a one-goal game. Really helped me go 4-0 on staff picks, mind you. So great weekend for yours truly. But Rosie, let's just give the flowers to Philly for their exercising their demons and getting their second win of the Bill Tierney era.
Yeah, how beautiful is it for Bill Tierney to, on his, you know, exit out for the year, finally gets on the happy side of one of these one-goal heartbreakers? You know, obviously, media picture, it doesn't matter. They're still going home and watching the championships from their couches. But you feel much better if you are a Water Dog or a member of Water Dog Nation, that you are not sitting around all off season thinking about yet another sad, sad loss.
And the fact that it was one goal win just made it all the sweeter, because five of their update the numbers every podcast because they're that staggering. Five of the eight losses by one goal, six by one possession with that two goal loss in there. Just a wild game that saw Connor Schellenberger miss his second game of the season after being sidelined in that second half of week 10 action down in Denver. Then you go up to Utah, where Atlas are looking to stay riding high on that win streak and quite frankly, I think this helps them out a little bit. A one-goal loss not only humbles them, but rids them of any arrogance they might have going into the postseason. 7-3 and a hungry Atlas team versus an 8-2 and a maybe comfortable New York squad. Big difference when you're getting a couple weeks off. I know the league, I think, is hosting the two teams with bye weeks this weekend up at Gillette Stadium for practices and whatnot. Yeah, so they're not completely off. They'll get some time together. But Rosie, just without Schellenberger, Cormier comes in. He scores 5 goals. Baptiste, he's drawn with fellow Pioneer staff against the whole game. Liam Etzman is awesome. So there's that. A whole lot of things just not to be concerned about. Maybe just Schellenberger's injury, but I think that this extra, these couple weekends off will really benefit him.
Yeah. It really depends on what is going on with him. And I think they probably know if they'll get him back, and they're just not telling us. But we saw kind of the, you know, I guess plan B, if he's not going to be available, which, you know, you certainly have to entertain any sort of, especially any sort of foot related thing. You know, if one thing is somebody steps on your foot or something like that, it's another thing if there's a teeny tiny bone in it that broke or something like that. I don't know. That's just me saying that. There is a lot to be enthusiastic about from this game if you're at Atlas. You know, I mean, Baptiste looked great. Like you mentioned, the jawing, which is really fascinating. Having heard from Bill Tierney's son, Trevor, that Trevor Baptiste is, in fact, Bill's favorite Trevor. So it must have been something kind of, you know, kind of jarring watching his favorite Trevor going after his recent star face-off guy. But yeah, you said it with Peyton Cormier. A great thing I think that they did is they didn't say, okay, Peyton, you're going to be Shelley now, right? Because they're totally different. This round peg square holes, right? You can't put him into that lineup and say, go do anything even remotely resembling what we had, you know, your predecessor doing. You know, in fact, they just said, you know, you're going to be a midfielder, right? And just run around up top and, you know, just play in the slot, get open around the crease, stay up top side and just, you know, be a nightmare, right? Are you going to put a short stick on him in coverage all the time? This is the kind of stuff that makes it very easy for people who were yelling during the draft about how come nobody's taking Peyton Cormier. Now they feel brilliant. You know, the rest of the year, things had been going just fine. And, you know, if he wasn't playing, it all made sense. The way that they put him in this time was brilliant. I think they did it perfectly. I do want to say this, if you are looking for, aside from obviously the fact that they just lost, a word of kind of caution and, you know, being careful about this Atlas team, they're losing every other game. It is not what they were at the beginning of the season. They had a great run where they were steamrolling guys, right? But we have just seen them recently. Week 4 loss, week 5 win, 7 loss, 9 win, 10 win, another one with a loss. Like, they're not stringing together win after win after dominant win, and they are really going to have to earn this, you know, this title run a lot more than we would have assumed earlier on in the season, where they just looked unstoppable.
Yeah, really no easy task with when you consider who the opponent is going to be. In my opinion, the playoff venue-wise, the regular season final standings could not have worked out better, with Boston being the highest seed and hosting the quarterfinals. Not really, but this is like the predetermined host and me saying they're the host as the top seed. And then the next week, Atlas are the top seed. They're the number one seed going in. And the playoffs are in Long Island, maybe their vacation home. If you will, coming from UAlbany to start the season, you get to go to Long Island to get to Philly for the championship. So the opponent is not going to be easy. And when you bring up the opponent's number 4 seed, Maryland Whipsnakes, versus number 5 seed, Denver Outlaws. How could you do so without mentioning just the rookie of the year candidate that is TJ Malone? TJ, welcome to the show.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it. This is like one of the only times I'm getting outside today, so it's a nice, it's like a perfect little combo. Go for a walk and get hop on with the boys.
Absolutely.
Hey, TJ Malone grinding on and off the field this season. You just love to see it. TJ, we were just discussing your future possibly opponent if you get past the Denver Outlaws and these New York Atlas and their incredible season. But let's focus in on you and this incredible Whipsnakes win streak to end the regular season here. 4 straight wins. You get a bye week to end the regular season. Does that bye take away any of the momentum that you guys had going into the playoffs?
Yeah, so we will see. That's the answer, I guess. But we're doing a good job. Our leaders on our team, our captains, Matt Dunn and Jake Bernhardt, have been doing a great job at just continuing to inspire, even when we're on our bye week, holding each other accountable. We have a group chat where we send photos of us working out. Just because, as you know, we don't practice in the team during the week, even if we do have a game. So it's just a great way to hold each other accountable and continue to work hard towards the vision, even when you're not together.
Is it required to have a photo of you doing it? So, like, nobody's BSing each other and you're not just saying you're doing it?
Yes. I mean, it's not, nothing's mandatory, but it's anytime someone's working out, they want to show that they're working out, and it builds team camaraderie, and you can always get called out if you're not doing stuff. So always try to get in a photo every once in a while.
Yeah, you're getting the boys fired up is what you're doing, you know? You're getting jacked, and you want other people to see it. So it's exactly. why wouldn't you?
Exactly. You know the drill.
Now, TJ, you mentioned it, though, like having leaders like Jake Bernhardt and Matt Dunn playing with a fellow rookie like Ajax Zapatello, coming in a team with Matt Rambo is kind of the face of the team. What's it like being a Penn State guy, not having to make buddy-buddy and friends with all these Terps?
It was definitely weird putting on the Whipsnakes uniform for the first time, just because the helmet is literally a Maryland lacrosse helmet. It looks the exact same. And so that was pretty weird. And it's funny, I didn't even think about it until I really got to training camp, because I thought the colors were pink and green or whatever that was. And then I didn't realize they had switched their colors to be actually Maryland color. So that was like a fun joke that the Maryland guys were playing on, because I went to training camp with Kevin Winkoff and Grant Hawes, 2 other Penn State guys. And so that was a joke that was going on all week about how weird it was that we were putting on their college teams uniforms and stuff. So
I'm sure.
Now, Kevin mentioned you suiting up along with Matt Rambo, and just got me thinking, when you're out there on an attack line, you are literally surrounded by attackmen of the year and MVPs to left and right of you. How has that felt kind of being in the middle of that group? And do you feel some sort of, you know, pressure or anything perform with that kind of lineup around you?
Yeah, definitely honored, first of all, just to be out there with those guys. 2 of the greatest legends ever to play the game of lacrosse. And the fact that I get to learn from them and to play on the same line as them has just been a dream come true. I don't know if they know how many times I've watched each of their highlights well before I even knew I was going to play with them. So, I mean, we're talking as a kid. So, super cool and surreal feeling playing with them. And no pressure, honestly, because if I don't play well, I know, like you said, the MVP and the attackman of the year are right next to me. So there's really no pressure on me. I'm just kind of the young guy trying to fit in and do my best and help wherever the team needs me.
Now, let's go all the way back to May. You're finishing up your state college, Penn State Nittany Lions career, and DJ, the draft goes on. I think you had a chance to go as early as fourth, maybe, and I think I had you going sixth overall in that first round. You end up dropping to the third round. Jim Stagnita could not have been happier post-draft, raving all about you, that how you really made his draft look good. What was that whole night experience like for you, and how much has it fueled you this season?
Yeah, not really fueled me. I'm just, honestly, I've told people this a lot, but when people ask about the third round pick, it doesn't really affect me very much, because my main focus was getting on the best team that would be the best fit for me versus being the highest pick as possible. So the Whip Snakes, who I thought were a really good fit for me. And so when they called my name, I was very, very happy, because I was told that they needed a quarterback, and I was happy to, you know, try to make that role and help in that capacity. So it hasn't really fueled me. I'm just kind of going out there and playing. I know the capability of my game, and it doesn't really matter where I was drafted, because I don't feel like that really defines me very much. So to answer that question, but then to answer the other question about that night, it was an awesome night. We pretty much our whole Penn State team gathered and watched it at one of my teammate Matt Costin's house. And we just all kind of celebrated. We were hoping there'd be more Penn State draft picks that night. But we didn't really know what to expect. I saw on the projected Kark's projected board, I was first round, but each round kept going by, and we're like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to be drafted here. We'll see. So when the name finally came across, it was definitely a relief just seeing that up there and knowing that I get another chance to play at the next level. And I just want to keep playing the game of lacrosse as long as I can, because it's given me so much. And so that was the cool part of the night.
Now, I kind of asked about some of the guys you play with. As far as playing against, have you kind of had a moment during this season where you kind of had that, holy crap, I'm playing against this guy moment?
Yeah, playing against Tom Schreiber and Jeff Teed. I mean, I've had plenty of those moments. I would say the biggest kind of wake-up call was during training camp, when we were scrimmaging the archers. And I got off to a pretty good start, had a couple early goals. And my Uber Eats driver's almost here. I gotta go back to the apartment. Had a couple early goals and was getting ahead of myself and tried to split a double team, and basically got popped in the face. And I remember Coach Staggs coming up to
Oh no, the story was just getting good. Listeners, fasten your seatbelts, because here it comes. TJ, rewind a little bit.
Sorry,
you left for a hot second there, but.
Yeah.
Right when the story was getting juicy. Call that. Answer call. And you can come back in.
No, all good. I just had to, I don't know why. Shut off.
I gotcha.
But yeah, long story short, he's like, if you want to have a long career in this league, you can't be doing stupid stuff like that. And that was just a good wake up call, because he's so right. I mean, part of playing in the PLL and why these guys have had certain guys have had such long longevity is not only their skill, but how smart of players they are. I think of someone like Kieran McCardle that has played for so long, and he's so steady. Because he just plays so smart and doesn't often put his body on the line and finds ways to be productive without, you know, being in trouble. So that was something that was kind of a big wake up call for me.
Yeah, and that's actually really cool to hear. I see a lot of similarities with you and Karen's game, just your ability to score in a variety of ways, your ability to, I think you're more of a two-handed player than Kieran is, perhaps, but you can score in quite a bit ways, and just the fact that you're the fourth leading scorer in the whole league as a rookie, 37 points, 19 goals, 18 assists in 10 games. Pretty spectacular numbers, so keeping up the production from the college days for sure. So the part of your story that I think most listeners know, if I think they're familiar with some of the Inside Lacrosse content you've been on for throughout the year, that I wrote a feature on kind of your recovery process after a couple hip surgeries that saw you be able to play this past season with that extra medical red shirt. So from your journey from rehabbing all those months to having a comeback season for the ages, really taking Penn State to the Final Four, another really successful season to hang up your Penn State career. Just how much do you kind of take that mindset of really never taking this game for granted and giving it everything you got every time you get on the field?
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. And I appreciated that article a lot back in the day. That was really cool that you wrote that about Penn State and about my kind of recovery. So that was pretty cool. So thank you. I would say the biggest thing that my injury did for me was it took the game away from me for a long time, and I would have so much pain playing because my hips would be in so much pain, and it made the game so much less enjoyable because if you're doing something that hurts, it's just hard to enjoy it. So what my surgeries did, it took me away from the game for a little bit and really made me miss it. And when I came back, I had so much fun playing because I knew that I'd spent so long not being able to play pain-free. And so that was the biggest blessing for me was it was almost like a mental reset when people come back from vacation or something and they just can't wait to get back to work. That's kind of how it was for me. And I honestly view it as an advantage versus a disadvantage, even though I took, I guess, you know, a year and a half off of lacrosse. It was honestly helped my game long term. So that's what I would say about that. And I've just been super blessed to continue to be healthy now and just continue to keep playing at the PLL with my hips healthy. I mean, it's kind of a miracle.
Well, TJ, it's no miracle. I remember, so I went to the Sixes training camp for Team USA, and the amount of hip stretching that you were doing on that sideline, it's no wonder you're keeping those in healthy shape.
Yeah, man, you gotta do what you gotta do. So that's part of the protocol.
All right, Rosie, kick us off with the last question, and we'll let the TJ go eat his Uber Eats.
Yes, sir. Before that food, it's cold. TJ, I got something I'm dying to ask you here, and we always get the same answer from most athletes. And it's that they don't care. So I just need a yes or no here. You guys being in a position to see who your opponent was, when you were following those games this past weekend, were you rooting for one team over another? You don't have to say which team, but did you have, like, were you kind of hoping to face a particular team?
No. Keep it simple, no. Well, our group chat was, our Swift Snakes group chat was going off a decent amount just with, if this happens, who we play and stuff like that. But I don't think anyone cared who we were playing, because I think we're pretty confident that we're in a pretty good spot, I think, no matter who we have to play. The parity in the PLL right now is just so crazy that even the two, like you saw this past weekend with the Water Dogs beating the Atlas, even the two worst teams in the league that don't even make the playoffs, they could beat any team in the league on any given day. So I don't think it really matters, because it's really whoever just shows up that day from what I've experienced in my short time in the PLL.
TJ, we appreciate you showing up here tonight for our special podcast. Good luck the rest of the way, and looking forward to seeing you on Labor Day Monday.
Let's go. Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate the flexibility. I know my schedule's just changed with starting the new job, so I appreciate you guys being flexible, and I hope there wasn't too much background noise of New York.
No, hey, it added to the interview, honestly.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you, Kevin and Rosie. I'll catch you guys soon.
You're the man, DJ. Thanks so much. What a fun interview that was. For what it's worth, for my money, I think is the leading front runner for this year's Rookie of the Year end of season award. But Rosie, we're not there yet, and we've got some more lacrosse to talk about, as the two opponents that they may play in that next round of the playoff. Well, so they're playing the Denver Outlaws, of course, and the Denver Outlaws had a chance to win the West with the regular season finale coming down to that high stakes game. We talked about it a little bit with, actually, Rosie, we didn't talk about Boston and Chaos, did we?
Nope, not yet.
Let's shift gears to that one, and then we'll... What a fun interview. What a fun interview that was with, for my money, is the leading front runner of the Rookie of the Year conversation this season. TJ, thanks for joining the show. Rosie, let's hit on the last two games of the weekend before completely giving our thoughts for the first round of the 24 postseason here. And one matchup that we saw is a complete preview for the quarterfinal round. Boston Cannons take this one 11-10 over the Carolina Chaos in what's kind of a classic battle of the one of the league's best offenses, that which was the league best offense last summer, and up there with the Atlas, but not quite as great scoring averages this summer, versus hands down the best defense with Blaze Reardon and that vaunted close defensive unit. Rosie, what a game winner it was. Just Ryan Drenner finding a way to get it done.
Just the most Ryan Drenner goal possible. You know, it's nothing drawn up. It's nothing that anybody's expecting to happen. Nobody on that field or in the stands or on the planet was assuming that there was going to be a play where Ryan Drenner's name is called in that offense. But as he did in this game, and as he has done throughout his entire pro career, he just kind of makes things happen. And you need your superstars, right? I think we've seen that year in and year out. You need somebody like your superstars, like your Tom Schreiber in last year's championship. You know, hey, we got to win this game for everything. Who's this ball going to? Who's putting it in the back of the net, right? That's your Tom Schreiber situation. You need those guys. You've got your you've got your Asher Nolting, you've got your Marcus Holman, but you need somebody to get your one and one every now and then, right? And that is what Ryan Drenner is basically counted on doing every stop he's had as a pro, and he just consistently delivers. This was, I believe, his first shot of the game. And like I said, nothing drawn up for him, but, you know, he's right there for a rebound and just swats it in. And if he had tried going for a ground ball, he's probably getting tackled by Austin Kaut. You know, if he tries to really scoop it, he's not getting that off at all. He did exactly what he had to do and the only thing he could have done to be successful. And that's just kind of Ryan Drenner for you.
He follows the play. It's Matt Campbell takes that shot from straight on, and he is looking for any type of rebound to come out. Now, Rosie, just both teams getting double digits in this one was a win for me. Now the Cannons are expected to get there. The Chaos, not so much. Their defense is, again, so incredible that I do agree with the sentiment that no one wants to see them in the playoffs, as they've proven time and again in first round matchups in the past, but they were coming off a week where they only scored 4 goals. What about this performance kind of gave you optimism that they can have success at Gillette with this offense?
Well, so it is. So there's two kind of sides. First of all, when Blaze Reardon goes out with what I guess we're just going to categorize as a lower body injury, I'm not exactly sure what the medical terminology is because I don't know literally where the ball hit him, but I know I do not want a ball to hit me there.
Yep.
So he goes out of the game. But Austin Cowell comes in, and the thing you can say that we have said forever is just Austin Cowell is a tremendous goalie who happens to be a backup, right? Like, he was a star goalie who just, at this point, you know, being a small amount of teams and just really liking the chaos locker room and atmosphere. Most guys are chaos guys, and they just want to be there. So that's why he's there backing up. He could certainly start. But he's just such a, as great as Blaze is, it's just such a, there's not much of a drop-off. They don't have to readjust their defense. You can ask any of the polls. They're like, yeah, we don't do anything differently. You know, we've just got Austin back there now. So that's kind of, but, you know, of course, that doesn't get you more points, right? So that's just kind of a testimony to how much depth they have and how they can kind of rally if things go wrong. Another thing that kind of points to that is Jack Rowlett going out of this game, but somehow they're still not getting run out of the place, even when he goes out, as you know, kind of a game-changing defenseman as he is. As far as, you know, optimism for Carolina, I think the real thing, and you touched on it with the scoring droughts that have kind of been, you know, a symptom of their season. I really liked Ross Scott taking some more initiative on the offensive plays because he's one of those people who kind of thrives on unsettled situations. You know, if you get the ball working around and he's at X, when he wants to, he can just kind of initiate from X. And if you're a player who has that quick first step, you just freak out the whole defense topside, right? Because everybody starts sliding. Everybody else has to work on their second slides. So all you need there is a guy who's really, really, really quick. And that's what Ross Scott brings to the offense. So, you know, if they're working the ball around and nothing's happening, and if he can just get a step on his guys, it throws the entire defense on their heels. So ideally, we see more of that in the postseason. I think when he does it, he's successful. It's a low risk sort of thing because, you know, he doesn't go in with his head tucked like he has to go diving into the goal. So, you know, if he gets blocked, he can just pass it out and there's no harm done. So I would say I want to see more Ross Scott doing that. And, you know, if he's not doing that, more Josh Byrne, is clearly he had no rust from that week off. He showed up and went right back to work. So, yeah, I think as far as those guys go, they can carry this team quite a long way now that it is the postseason, a.k.a. chaos time.
Are you surprised, Rosie? Like, that burst of speed became so synonymous with Ryan Minnikus's season last season. Like, we were really impressed. 24 points in 10 games in the regular season, only 10 points in a smaller role this year as coming out of the box. 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 of those games were without a point. He's held to without a point for the last two games of this regular season. Are you surprised that he hasn't been incorporated more into this offense with their kind of new look and new pieces?
Yeah, very much so. I thought based on last season, especially some of his games, I remember like his Fairfield game, which was just, you know, like a tremendous sort of Ryan Minnikus. I don't know if that was a coming out party, but it was definitely a party for him. I expected he would have a much larger role in this offense. When they signed Jules Hennenberg in the offseason and, you know, he kind of did the hashtag attack, I was like, well, where is he going to go? You know, got Ryan Minnikus down there. So I just kind of penciled him in as being a cornerstone moving forward. And then when Ross Scott joins the team, same sort of question. You know, it didn't seem to make sense position-wise how all those guys were going to be out there. When Ross Scott had a tremendous game earlier on in the season, Andy Towers compared him to Jordan Wolfe in his speed, you know, speed burst from X, essentially. And when I heard that, I was kind of like, oh, okay, that's the attack is locked in unless, you know, unless he really screws up. I figured that is his role to lose at that point because, you know, Jordan Wolfe is not an attackman people are often compared to. So when I heard, and even for Andy Towers, who has nothing but the highest of high praise for everyone wearing a Chaos uniform, just throwing that name out there, I was like, okay, obviously he recognizes there must be a lot in store for this guy as far as running the offense and generating these kind of fast-paced plays that can throw off a defense. So then I kind of backed off of the belief that Minicus was going to be the guy from X.
So these teams, they knew it might be the case with how everything was starting to shake out going into this one. Second game on Friday night it was, and then it turned out to be true. Boston gets the third seed, and the Chaos get that final playoff spot as the sixth seed. As they love this position, they love being the final team in. So we'll see how it shakes out. But let's go into the opponent that they might face in the semifinals. The winner of this one will play the two seeded Western Conference champs, Utah Archers, and the loser of this one became the fifth seed and was the Denver Outlaws, which we've talked to TJ about earlier in the show. Utah takes this one 13-9, and as our other guest talked about, you know, Rosie, it's great having two guests on one podcast. It's great to keep track of all these guests. He hit it on when first bringing up the crowd. What was the first moment he mentioned? Bo Pettersson picking off that what was a terrible cross-field pass attempt by Brent O'Neill. Ill-advised, off the back foot, kind of lobbed it. Two people were crowding next to each other, so like, how did you think either of them were open? Anyway, provided an awesome moment for the Utah native. Pettersson splitting right to left and burying it to the bottom right. Sure, he dreamed about that one growing up there, and you saw it a lot in his Michigan year, and not as much for when his undergrad years at Princeton, but it was an awesome moment. And the just way that the Archers closed this one out, Dobson got hot. The offense really started to pick things up and click, as we talked about with Jack down the stretch. Rosie, can this team really win it, though, without Schreiber?
Man, you know, initially you have to assume no, right? I mean, just because he is such a pivotal part of the offense and the team's identity as a whole, you know, they are synonymous. He's been there the whole time, and he's had, you know, literally unprecedented success, right? Like, he is... I mean, he's Tom Schreiber, right? He is the man.
We were making the case for him being the best player of all time earlier.
Right, right. It's you really can't, you know, undersell how just solid a performer he is. And the team was, you know, devastated to see him have to leave the game. And, you know, it kind of sucked a lot of the energy out of it. And but, you know, they brought it as a rallying cry, right? And it is, you know, you have to kind of, I guess, keep it in perspective to a degree if we're not in the locker room, right? Because, I mean, he is walking around and smiling and talking. You know, he's going to be fine. But in the moment, they certainly had to say, you know, hey, let's do this for Tom. Let's get out there and win it for him. And that certainly worked. I mean, the question is that going to be enough fuel? It certainly seemed that the surrounding cast and... I mean, I got to be careful even saying that because I don't want to downgrade somebody like a Connor Fields or a Grant Ament to just kind of be like, oh, the other guys, right? Because, I mean, they're pretty good. They're pretty established in their own right. But neither Fields nor Ament or any of the other people seemed to kind of wither under the pressure of now I have to take my game to the next level. You know, you get somebody like a Mac O'Keefe who's like, well, say less. I'm going to shoot this ball 80 times. Don't you worry about that. I got this taken care of. But just everybody else in the team, they all raised their game up, right? You know, you're talking about Trey LeClaire just coming out of the box, who's unstoppable in that role. And you know, I mean, our guest, Jack Van Ocho, showing up, just no pressure whatsoever. I mean, they have, we saw the same thing when Matt Moore went down, right? They have built depth to their roster in a sense where if one player goes out, everyone else can kind of step up their game and fill in those spaces. Ryan Ambler doing more dodging. I mean, you had a play in that game where it was Ryan Ambler dodging and then kicking it out to Dyson Williams, right? I mean, if you're going to get Ambler to Williams on a consistent basis, then, you know, who is stopping these guys, right? Yeah, it is impossible to count them out, even though they have lost the Tom Schreiber.
It's really impressive that depth that they've cultivated and how whoever they reinsert in there is ready to go, is always ready to go and fulfill their part. Now, someone who missed their first loss of the season, who happened to be against these Denver Outlaws and was back for this game, was none other than the super intimidating and scary and very angry Graham Hossick back into the back line. He matched up against Brennan O'Neill, who, of course, if you listen to the theme song, that was the last clip used of the theme song that we've been using this season. And Brennan O'Neill went off in that game. So he completely took over, 7 points in that fourth quarter, complete the 7-goal comeback. And Hossick completely shuts him down. Zero points in the regular season finale. So, you know, Matt Dunn, Ajax Apatello, and the Whip Snakes are going to be watching film of what worked against this one. But it's also Graham Hossick. So it's not easy to replicate.
Do you think Graham Hossick knows we think he's scary?
Oh, he knows everyone thinks he's scary.
just like how a tall person knows they're tall, he just knows he's a scary person.
Oh, yeah. So, that's that, really. And there's nothing more to be said. Rosie, what matchup are you looking forward to more going into Gillette Stadium, Boston, Massachusetts? It's Labor Day Monday, and Labor Day is really early this year, so that's the reason why the games are on a Monday afternoon, 4 p.m. and 6:30, ESPN2 for the first game, ESPN Plus for the second. Carolina Chaos, the 6th seed versus the 3rd seed at Boston Cannons coming up first. And then that 4-5 matchup, Denver versus Maryland. Rosie, if you had to pick one, you can't say both. I'm holding you to it. Which one are you more excited to watch?
I am more excited to watch Cannons Chaos because of the, granted, there's been, you know, there's going to be this time off, but because of the relatively instant rematch factor from just having gone against one another. And the Cannons kind of threw out some stuff in that last game. You know, they were kind of shaking up their lines a little bit. They take Pat Cavanaugh and they move him to the midfield, and then they start Matt Campbell at attack. And they're, you know, kind of trying to move some things around in that regard. Theory, little conspiracy theory. I think we'll see if there's something to this. We actually won't. We'll never know either way. My theory was that Brian Holman said, hey, just in case we see these guys again, I'm going to throw some nonsense in here. And, you know, we're not getting the bye, right? We're not going to get the first round bye. Like, let's not even, you know, we're not dropping the 18 goals or whatever they needed to get that first round bye. So really all they needed to do was put something on tape, right? Like, that's essentially what that game was for them. So they're like, okay, well, guess what, Andy Towers? Maybe we're going to play Matt Campbell at attack now. You don't know. I mean, is he actually going to do it? I don't think so. But I think he just wanted to throw out some nonsense and take a few extra minutes to waste their time during this break, and they're going to have to spend a little time considering what if they do it again, right? The chances aren't great, but that's five. Say they spend 5 minutes thinking about how to cover Matt Campbell on attack. That's 5 minutes where they're not going to be worrying about covering Pat Kavanaugh on attack. And they're just going to have to open up the possibility that that might be something to focus on heading into the next game. So I think some of that game this weekend was Brian Holman just throwing out nonsense to do it. Now, he was being interviewed about it because during the game, they interviewed him, right? And they were like, oh, so what's going on with that look? And he was like, oh, I don't know. Just want to try some things out.
He's like giggling.
Yeah. He's like, oh, you know, we'll try it out. Buddy, buddy, it's the last game of the regular season. You were not like, maybe Matt Campbell should be our starting attack, but right? He's been doing pretty well with the midfield thing, right? I feel like maybe they'll ride that out.
I don't know. Because why wouldn't you just put like Will Manny in then?
And yeah.
Or Mike Robinson. Insert him back into the lineups to give him another look. They were both on the protected roster, so they were both there. Presumably.
Certainly could have done that.
I did see Manny there. He's a Utah local now, so he was in the area.
Yeah. Certainly could have done that.
So here I am thinking, like, I do love conspiracy theories and brainstorming said theories on this podcast. But the reason, like, Matt Campbell, probably a better 32-second option, probably a better lefty option on that fast break. He played attack his final season at Villanova. Not totally out of the realm of possibilities. Though I would really like to see both Kavanaughs in the lineup for playoffs. Like, I don't think it'll happen. Like, we haven't seen Matt since when? Like, week 6 or 7?
Yeah, so, it has been a minute.
The awkwardness of Pat taking his spot as maybe, just from an outsider view, it's like, is that like awkward between you two? And that's why neither of you are like producing. I don't think that's clearly not the case, but it's another theory I'm throwing at you.
That's, you know, but speaking of the Kavanaughs, do you think like, was that game a showcase or a time for Pat to get more midfield runs?
I do, because he's much better on the right side and at X, and Asher's at X and Marcus is on the right side. So they got to figure out the right spot for him. He's not going to be as effective of a lefty attackman as you want him to be. He didn't play lefty attack in order. He was at the point of those fast breaks and played at X while Jake Taylor or whatever D mid they put on those weird faceoff wings that they did for playing defensively sometimes in the playoffs. Anyway, some of the other, like Matt, I just think he would have done more with like a Mike Robinson or like a Will Manny look if it was truly like a let's get someone on tape kind of call. But I appreciate it.
The only counter suggestion I would say was they would have to practice with those players in there. You know, it would be a different sort of thing. You know, Carolina certainly could have to then say, you know, let's worry about defending Will Manny or something like that. But I would offer if you use the same guys, they have to worry about, you know, if you have you cover this guy and then that same guy goes up and plays in the next position. You know, like if you have Jack Rowlett covering Matt Campbell and then Matt Campbell leaves and starts playing midfield, that could stretch out your defensive scheme a little bit. But again, I'm just hoping that I'm buying into what I'm saying, which was that Brian Holman was just trying to fool everybody.
It would be cool to see Manny at Gillette Stadium. Well, they played at Harvard Stadium as the old Cannons and ML, but it would still be cool in Boston for the Cannons in the playoffs. Throw out a wrinkle in there. He scores 7 goals. You look like a genius.
He's scoring the overtime game winner if he's in that game.
He's getting short stick the whole time, and he's not even running past them. He's shooting through them. Now, it'll be interesting. Like, the Chaos defense presents so many matchup problems because it's so tough to win all those matchups. And, yeah, to go back to my original question, I'm definitely more looking forward to Denver, Maryland, as
nice.
I know that both those offenses are more likely to definitely show up, and we'll see what happens. The ties of getting either the top seeded Atlas for the 4v5 and the second seeded Archers, I think, will be even just as juicy as we get into Long Island weekend. But Rosie, that's for later. We will get there eventually. Listeners, thanks so much for bearing with us through a pretty awesome episode with two guests. And if you like what you heard, tell a friend, leave a review, leave a rating, and come back for more Inside Lacrosse podcast right here or wherever you get your podcasts.